Hi, this is Pastor Chris, and welcome to Strength for Today from Living Hope Baptist Church in Geneva, New York. Today is Monday, May 4th, 2020. We have some old framed photographs hanging around the house, and someday, Lord willing, we will order them in some manner. But for now, they're just hung randomly next to the stairs, just to sort of keep them off the floor. And each morning as I go down the stairs, I glance at them. My wedding picture, my mom and dad's wedding picture, my grandparents' wedding picture, and a few other random photos of the kids and other relatives. One of those random photos is a picture of my father as a boy of about 5 years old. He is seated at the bottom of a couple steps next to his father. The picture is taken from the side, and both dad and granddad are looking off into the distance. It's really a great photograph, black and white, well posed. I think it seems particularly dramatic as Granddad is in uniform, and I know that the picture was taken in the Philippines, where the family lived until the outbreak of World War II. So the setting is interesting, and the clothing is interesting. But what has always intrigued me most about that picture as I've looked at it is my grandfather's head. His head was bald and shiny, with a small fringe of hair touching his ears and wrapping around the back of his head. Very bald, I remember thinking. When as a boy I'd look at that photo, he sure was bald. And then I'd think about how much my father looked like his father, even as a young boy. No wonder I'd think that Dad ended up bald. Yep, Dad had that same head, bald, sort of egg-shaped, shiny on top, fringe of hair on the sides. Oh, I've seen pictures of Dad with hair, like in his wedding photo, but I don't remember him that way. I guess he had lost most of it by the time I was old enough to remember. As I said, there are other photos hung in our stairwell. One of them is a wedding picture of my mom's mom and dad. And that's an interesting photo, too, as it comes from the 1920s. The most striking aspect of this photo is the difference in sizes between my grandparents. My grandmother was a short, thin lady, topping out at 4'8". My grandfather was a tall, muscular man of more than 6 feet. But really, what really catches my attention in that photo is my grandfather's head of thick, bushy hair. And this wasn't something he lost later. He had a full head of hair until he died in his early 50s. So there it is. Two grandfathers, one bald and one with thick hair, and a father who took after his dad. Fortunately, I've always taken after my mother's side of the family, and my brother has taken after my father's side. I have the broader, squarer head of my mom's dad, and I'm guessing that is what prompted my dad's offhand comment on that day. I was getting a haircut. No, not at the barber's. For some reason, we never went to the barber's. Dad always cut our hair at home, sort of a monthly ritual. Time for a haircut, he'd say. This always seemed to take place on Sunday evening, as it would coincide with The Wonderful World of Disney on TV. I think he thought watching the show would keep me from wriggling around, and now that I think about it, probably did. And so, when he'd say that, I'd run and get that old high chair we'd used as a barber's chair. And he would go to the drawer in the family room under the bookshelf and pull out the box with the electric clippers, the plastic guards, and the scissors. He'd plug those clippers in and hold them up in the air and flip the switch. They'd always give a large crack as the electricity would bring them to life, and then Dad would listen to the blades clattering and would adjust them until the clatter would turn into a nice smooth hum. And then he'd turn to me and tell me to climb up into the chair. And up I go, and then he'd make a big fuss of shaking out an old white sheet and letting it float down over me. Then he'd pull down the edge around my neck and clamp it down, all of it, with a clothespin. I think he enjoyed pretending to be a barber. And then he'd start cutting my hair. He only really knew how to do one haircut, a bowl cut. Now wait a minute. Now, this never occurred to me before. How come my brother didn't get bowl cuts? Dad cut his hair. Maybe Dad did know how to do another haircut. And if he did, why did I always end up with a bowl cut? Oh, well, I may never know the answer to that, but regardless, that's what I always got, a bowl cut. And frankly, what with my already droopy eyes, it was a haircut that just made me look stupid. But I should move on. It was always the same. Dad would start up those clippers and cut the sides and the back. Then he would spray water on my head until the hair hung flat. They start using those scissors to cut a straight line across the forehead and around the bangs and the ears. This is always a real high point of the haircut, and I mean that sarcastically, because I knew exactly what was about to happen. Happened every time. He'd pick up those scissors, and I'd hear the snip, snip as he'd work his way around the back of my head, and then he'd hold down the top of my ear. He was coming, wait for it. Couple more snips, and then a pause. One more snip, and then he cut my ear. Every stinking time. Every time. And I think knowing it was coming just made it worse. And then he put a finger to his lips and used that finger to wipe away the drops of blood. "Sorry," he'd say. And he'd try to distract me and prevent me from shrieking my outrage. I think it was in one of those moments, as he sought to distract me, that he ran his fingers through my hair and said, "I think you'll keep your hair when you get older." My guess is I thought at first something like, "Well, I'll need to, won't I, since I won't have heirs." But then as the comment sank in, I thought, hey, finally, something maybe I'll beat my brother at. And so instead of accusing my dad in this blatant cut and run, I'd ask him why he thought so. Well, he'd go back to cutting. In that point, he went back to cutting his hair, my hair. And as he did, he told me how hair loss, or hair keeping, if you will, follows the mother's line. How I looked like her side of the family and how her father kept a full head of hair. Of course, in my mind, I translated that into perfect sibling rivalry. My brother took after Dad's side. His dad and granddad both were bald, and my brother was doomed. Ha! I win in this issue of follicle failure. And so it seemed as time went on. My brother's hair started to recede while he was in high school, but I graduated high school with a bushy head of hair. Several years passed, and I discovered the joys of the barber shop, where they didn't cut my ears and for no charge would lather and shave the back of my neck with a straight razor. Barber shops are a little like coffee houses. Each one has a different atmosphere that reflects both the community and the owner, and it is good to vary where you go. It keeps things interesting. This brought me one day into a tiny barber shop near 58th Street in Manhattan. It was tiny. I think it only had one barber chair across from a waiting area with three or four other folding chairs. But it had a mirror that ran the length of one wall and a giant plate glass window that looked out on the street. The barber was an older Italian guy. I'm pretty sure if he had gone natural, his hair would have been gray, but as it was jet black. He had a big smile that I recall as unnaturally white, as if he either bleached his teeth or had opted for the brighter shade of dentures. And he was a nice, chatty guy. I remember my visit there pretty well because it was the first time I'd ever heard anybody say what he said. He was doing that thing barbers do, you know, where they comb up a section of your wet hair, catch it between two fingers, and then cut it straight across with scissors. And he suddenly said, "Getting a little thin back here, aren't you?" "Huh? No," I thought, "you must be wrong. I take after my mother's side, and all the men there had hair. And Dad said I would keep it." And the guy went on. He said, "Pretty normal in men your age. You know, it starts to thin, but you should do something to keep it." He stopped cutting and handed me a mirror and swung the chair around so I could approve the back. "You should do what I do," he said. I nodded my approval and he took the apron off my chest. "Every day," he continued, "I drink a juice glass of olive oil to keep my hair full and shiny." And he pointed at his head. "You can see how it works." "A juice glass of olive oil? Drink it every day? Even after all these years, the idea just makes me want to gag. Yuck." And sure, he had lots of hair, but he was Italian, and I bet the man on both sides of his family had kept their hair. Overall, that was a pretty devastating visit to the barber. One quick visit, I had learned I was starting to lose my hair, and I discovered that there were some things I was not willing to do to try and keep it. Maybe, I decided, hair just wasn't that important. I have one other memory of this battle with hair. It happened shortly after I'd married my first wife. She had noticed, who hadn't by then, that I was losing the hair at the back of my head, and she had heard of a marvelous new product called Rogaine that was supposed to regrow hair. And so she said we should try it. We had nothing to lose but my last shred of follicle dignity. But anyways, so we went to a doctor and we got a prescription for the stuff. It was pretty easy to use, came in a squirt bottle that released one dose per squirt. It wasn't tricky to apply. Merely put it on the palm of your hand and then rub it onto the spot where you're losing your hair. So morning and evening, my wife faithfully rubbed that stuff on my bald spot. And we waited for that miracle of new hair. And we waited, and we waited. Then one day she said, "It's working, it's working. I see these fine little white hairs growing where the other hair used to be." And that was the day I threw that stuff away, and I had to explain to her that those little white hairs were exactly what you get when you go bald, and if she would ever look closely at my dad or brother's head, she'd see that. Besides, I pointed out, if she looked at her palm, she'd see there was no hair. She hadn't grown any hair there, thank goodness. Well, since then, every so often, I receive an ad about hair restoration, and I just chuckle and I throw it away. I've been down that path before, and I'm really not interested in doing it again. For me, and only for myself, accepting baldness has been a matter of integrity. Now, please don't misunderstand me. I'm not trying to set myself out here as a paragon of integrity, and I'm not saying anyone else needs to accept baldness to have integrity. I'm only speaking for myself about myself. At some point in the past, I accepted my baldness and decided not to hide it under hats, to grow a comb-over, or to get plugs. I just accepted it and moved on, just how I am, and there is no sin in being bald. In the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus talks about hair. Doesn't talk about baldness, but he does talk about hair color. He observes you cannot make one hair white or black. Now, even back then, they had dye, and it would have been possible to color one's hair artificially, but that's not what he's talking about. What he is talking about is a person's ability to change the color of their hair by decree, or by fiat, or by simply wishful thinking. It's as if I had decided way back when I visited that Italian barber, that I was not going to permit myself to lose any more hair, and I would just think myself, will myself, to a full head of hair. You can see that, right, in your mind. A guy is sitting there, straining his brain, trying to force out new hair. It's ridiculous. Can't be done. My inability and yours to change hair color, or even the existence of hair by mere thought, demonstrates our limitations as finite creatures. We are not God, and we cannot create ex nihilo. I believe this recognition, that thinking something doesn't make it so, is a basic developmental task. As children, we all wondered whether we could wish or long something into existence, didn't we? Like, remember, Pinocchio taught us in the movie, when you wish upon a star, makes no difference who you are, anything your heart desires, it will come to you. And so we would wish and we'd believe and we'd just think that the wishing would make it so. But that is not reality, and that's why we call Pinocchio fantasy. And at some point in our development, we realize and accept the reality that we cannot just wish things into reality. And that is part of what becoming an adult is, of becoming mature. I think at some level, this is a maturing awareness that one is not God. That if there is a God, I and you am not He. This awareness is not salvific, of course, but it does point the way towards salvation. As carefully pondered, it reveals man's inability to rescue himself. In short, I suggest Jesus' observation about hair color exposes man's creatureliness and impotence, particularly as when contrasted to God's omnipotence. Or to say it another way, it enables us to recognize and accept the fact that God is God, and you and I are not He. And Psalm 100 says, "Know that the Lord, He is God. It is He who has made us, and not we ourselves." The recognition of God's sovereignty and omnipotence will lead us to many other important principles. For instance, the verses in this section of the Sermon on the Mount highlight a few. That you, being finite, have no control over the external world, and you cannot control the future. Of course, if we consider these ideas, we recognize the truth of them. I can't say with utter certainty what will happen tomorrow. Nor can you. At best, of course, we can guess. We cannot predict, with absolute certainty what anyone else will do in the next moment, let alone the next day. And of course, if we think about this more carefully, we see that we can't even accurately predict what we will do or think tomorrow ourselves. Or either with complete confidence predict whether or not we will even be ourselves tomorrow. Will we even be around? We don't know that for sure. So what can we say of our actions or of our future? Only that we hope to do such and such, or to be in such and such a place. Now, in this section of the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus addressed the taking of oaths. These oaths are such as were sometimes given by people with the idea of solemnizing and making more certain the statements given with them. But Jesus' observations is that these oaths lack any ability to increase the power of the swearer to perform what he says he will do. And if one calls upon something else, that is, heaven or Jerusalem, to bear witness, he takes the existence of that place and stakes its credibility on his own credibility, making it possible that, if he is proven untrue, The oath taker has enlisted the other to bear false witness. And to all this, Jesus says simply, don't do it. Just be a person of integrity. Let your yes be yes and your no be no. Do what you say you will. And don't try to inflate your credibility through wishful thinking or purloined trustworthiness. It's an interesting passage as we consider our lives today. Are we tempted here? Do we make boasts and then try to back them up with appeals to authority? Well, yes, of course, we do. I see this in myself most often in the heat of a disputed topic or the argument over a disputed topic. But let's take an example. COVID-19. Since we were quarantined, we have all talked about how long this quarantine will or should last. And we hear it debated over and over again in the media. And some people have made arguments that it will or should end on this date. And they cite data from models and nationwide testing. And then someone will say the opposite and trot out their own data. None of that is bad. An opinion is just fine when it is given as an opinion. But it becomes bad when it is said as an absolute, as a prophecy of sorts. At that point, one has enthroned oneself, or at least claimed direct communication with the one who actually sits on the throne, and in doing so has gone beyond what is right and moral. Now, I am not aware of such claims being made in the COVID-19 case, but if they were, they'd be wrong. So what do we do in this case with COVID-19? We trust him who holds the future. We confess that we are not God, and we do not know with certainty where this is going. And then we live within this tension, accepting our limitations and seeking by God's grace to control that which we can control, our own responses. It's like hair loss. I couldn't change it, but I could change how I would respond to it. In life, we are asked by God to respond with integrity to whatever he permits to come our way. Fortunately, we do know ultimately what the future holds. We do know that in the end, Jesus will return. We do know that his kingdom is coming. And because we know this, we can confidently, with joyful hope, wait in the tension and trust him. As we know, because of Jesus, the best is yet to come. God bless.